good evening, everyone. It's Lou Cavalli, and we're here with the Divided Kingdom radio show. And last week, we had to do a repeat. We had a little phone troubles, but using different phones today, so I hope that I'm coming through loud and clear. We'll begin with an article that appeared in the New York Post entitled, Biden Aides Were Willing to Do Undemocratic Things to Keep Faltering President in Power. And that's according to the author of a new book that we'll get to in a few seconds. This article was written by Victor Nava, N-A-V-A, and published May the 26th, 2025. Joe Biden's aides were willing to do undemocratic things, that's in quotes, undemocratic things to cover up the former president's mental decline and keep him in power for another 4 years. The author of a bombshell book revealed Sunday. Biden's team of unelected staffers felt justified in, quote, picking up the slack, unquote, for the faltering commander-in-chief and shielding him from the public because they vowed, or they viewed, President Trump as an, quote, existential threat, unquote, to democracy. Alex Thompson, co-author of Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, His Cover-Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again, told Fox News' Shannon Bream. And Bream asked Thompson, who would have been running the White House in a second Biden term? And she said that after noting that Thompson quoted a longtime Biden aide in his book, basically admitting he shouldn't be running again. And the author, a co-author in this case, Jake Tapper was one of the authors, CNN host. But Thompson, the other author, said, well, this president went on to say that when you're voting for a president, you're voting for the aides around him, the author and Axios journalist revealed. He went on, but these aides were not even Senate-confirmed aides, Thompson pointed out. These are White House aides that were unelected people. Bream, that is Shannon Bream, highlighted a passage from Thompson's book where one anonymous aide argued Biden, quote, just had to win, and then he could disappear for 4 years. He'd only have to show proof of life every once in a while. His aides could pick up the slack, unquote. Thompson explained that in his reporting for the book with co-author Jake Tapper, it became clear that many in Biden's orbit were willing to do almost anything and go to extreme lengths if it meant keeping Trump out of the Oval Office. Quote, if you believe, and I think a lot of these people do sincerely believe that Donald Trump was and is an existential threat to democracy, you can rationalize anything, including sometimes doing undemocratic things, which I think is what this person is talking about, Thompson told Bream. Thompson's book, entitled Original Sin, was released last week. And Thompson referred to the small group of people in Biden's inner circle running the White House as the Politburo, noting that the term was also used by some within the administration. The small, tight-knit group included top Biden aides, Mike Donilon, Steve Ricchetti, and Bruce Reed, as well as First Lady Jill Biden and the president's scandal-scarred son, Hunter. Thompson claims that Politburo were the, quote, ultimate decision-makers, unquote, as Biden's mental acuity declined. The term Politburo is commonly defined as the top echelon of a communist state. And again, that article appeared in the New York Post on May 26, 2025. And the title, if you want to look it up in more detail, Biden aides were willing to do undemocratic things to keep faltering president in power. Now, of course, that means, and this is Lou speaking now, that these aides were subverting the constitutional method of dealing with this. I believe it's the 25th Amendment, provides a way if the president is incapacitated either physically or mentally, and he is unable to determine that himself, it provides a way for government officials to put the vice president in charge until such a time as, if such a time ever does come, that the president can resume his duties. But you see, these aides were not willing to do that, perhaps out of loyalty to the president, perhaps out of a self-serving desire to keep their own jobs. And here's a companion article that appeared in the People's Voice on May 25th by Baxter Dimitri, entitled, Jake Tapper Breaks Down, Admits Propaganda Machine CNN Spread Fake News for Years. And you remember now that Jake Tapper was the other author of that book, Original Sin. And the subheadline reads, in a shocking and rare moment of apparent honesty, CNN anchor Jake Tapper appeared on the Megyn Kelly Show alongside journalist Alex Thompson and publicly admitted CNN's role in disseminating misinformation through the legacy media. During the broadcast, Tapper confronted years of mounting public criticism aimed at CNN and other mainstream outlets, conceding that conservative media had been right on numerous key issues. Issues that CNN, he admitted, had knowingly distorted or misrepresented to its audience. Tapper stated candidly, quote, Alex and I, and that's the other author we just finished the article on, Alex Thompson, and I are here to say the conservative media was right, and conservative media was correct. Tapper stated candidly, there should be a lot of soul searching, not just among me, but among the legacy media. And it says what? So I think if you go to that particular website, you can see a video. Perhaps that's part of this interview. Referring to CNN's role in actively downplaying President Biden's cognitive decline during his presidency and dismissing viral footage of him freezing or losing track of his thoughts as so-called sheep face, Tapper admitted, I'm not here to defend coverage that I've already said I wish I could do differently, unquote. Tapper, who has long positioned himself as a defender of journalistic integrity, appeared visibly emotional as he reflected on what he described as a period of personal and professional reckoning. He asked viewers for forgiveness and expressed a desire for a second chance, not just for himself, but for what he called, quote, a media culture that lost its way, unquote. The segment quickly went viral, igniting debate across both mainstream and alternative platforms. Critics called the confession too little, too late, declaring that it confirms CNN's reputation as a Democratic Party propaganda machine, while others saw it as a possible turning point in restoring accountability in journalism. Well, this is Lou again speaking. Does make you wonder. He couldn't criticize the president. He couldn't bring it up during the presidency of Joe Biden, but he was more than willing to make the profits by writing a book. So, well, we shall see. And again, that was from the People's Voice. Jake Tapper breaks down, admits propaganda machine, CNN, etc. And that was on May the 25th of this year. Next, from Fox News, U.S. officials delayed warning public about heart inflammation risk from COVID shot. And the subheading says, Senator Ron Johnson says Biden administration withheld crucial health information about the COVID-19 vaccine. By Brooke Sigmund, Fox News, May 21st. And it reads, U.S. health officials knew about the risks of myocarditis from COVID-19 vaccines, but downplayed the concern and delayed informing the public about the risks of taking the jab. That is according to a new Senate report released by Senator Ron Johnson Wednesday. Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, chairman of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, has been investigating the safety and efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccines. Earlier this year, he subpoenaed the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, for records relating to COVID-19 vaccine safety data and communications about the pandemic. The interim report, spanning 55 pages, obtained and reviewed by Fox News Digital, revealed that Biden administration officials, quote, withheld crucial health information from the subcommittee and the public, unquote. Since 2021, Johnson has sent more than 70 oversight letters, which he says were either completely ignored or inadequately addressed. The report highlights the records Johnson has obtained pursuant to the subpoena from the new Trump administration-led health agency. Specifically, the report focuses on HHS awareness of and response to cases of myocarditis, a type of heart inflammation following COVID-19 vaccination. Johnson's report says the 2,473 pages of records he obtained, quote, contain evidence of the Biden administration's efforts to downplay and delay warning the public about the risks of myocarditis associated with the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, unquote. And skipping down now, Johnson's report said that health officials at CDC and the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, quote, ultimately decided against issuing a formal HAN, which is Health Alert Network, message, and instead posted clinical considerations on CDC's website about myocarditis. And the quote goes on, this is the quote from Johnson's report, based on the subpoenaed records the subcommittee has received to date, as well as public freedom of information documents, this interim report will highlight records and present a timeline showing U.S. health officials knew about the risk of myocarditis, those officials downplayed the health concerns, and U.S. health agencies delayed informing the public about the risk of the adverse event, unquote. And again, I'll summarize, I'll just cut it down a little bit because it's a fairly lengthy article. The report also highlights the Israeli Ministry of Health notifying officials at the CDC back in February 2021 of, quote, large reports of myocarditis, particularly in young people, following the administration of the Pfizer vaccine, unquote. The report also highlights documents showing CDC officials discussing, quote, safety signals, unquote, for myocarditis with mRNA vaccines in April 2021 based on Defense Department and Israeli data, but, quote, still not taking immediate steps to warn the public, unquote. And that pretty well sums that up. So you see what Elizabeth, my late wife, and I wrote in our book, COVID and Coming Chaos, is now coming out into the open. We were among the early ones to warn the public about that in our book. And I still have a few copies of that book left. If anyone would like a free copy, just write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Caroly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, just address it to Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Once again, that's Lou Caroly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Well, now we move on to an article about the Democrats trying to stifle a Republican in Maine. So first, we'll get something direct from Maine, from the Fort Fairfield Journal. And by the way, the preceding article was from Fox News on May 21st. Now, the Fort Fairfield Journal is a conservative paper. It's a neat little paper, and some of you might like to take a look at it. And if you do, you can write to the Fort Fairfield Journal. It has a neat little thing in the front. It says, Certified NSA Snoop Free Zone. And it says the National Security Agency is currently unable to track and snoop on what is reading, which article, or who is reading which article contained in this newspaper, because reading from a piece of paper cannot be tracked via online electronics. And if you are interested, let me see if I can very quickly tell you how to get the paper, and I don't get anything from this. This is just a little public service here. You can write to Fort Fairfield Journal, Post Office Box 247, Fort Fairfield, Maine. And the zip is 04742. Again, Fort Fairfield Journal, Post Office Box 247, Fort Fairfield, that's all one word, Fairfield, Maine, 04742. Neat little paper. It has a lot of local stuff, of course, but it also has some very incisive articles in it. For example, the editor, David Duchesne, has an article, should you attend a book-burning event? I wouldn't. Another one, the copy and paste syndrome. How the media, or has the media, run out of ideas? Or are they just farmer puppets? And this particular article, I'm going to join it to one that appeared later in LifeSite News. The one in the Fort Fairfield Journal says, Representative Laurel Libby loses first round of lawsuit against Maine Speaker of the House. The fight has only just begun. This is by their editor, David Duchesne. In February, Maine Representative Laurel Libby, Republican of Auburn, Maine, was censured by the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives for posting a publicly available photo of a Maine transgender, quote, woman, unquote, public school student, a male who thinks he's a female, unfairly winning a sporting competition while competing against girls in his high school track and field team. Libby was censured by the Democrats in the House, who levied an unprecedented punishment of removing her right to speak and vote on the House floor unless she apologized for telling the truth in her post about transgender athletes. Libby immediately fought back with a lawsuit containing a motion for injunction against the censure. The Maine court judges quickly recused themselves and tossed it to a federal district court in Rhode Island due to a conflict of interest with the young trans athlete's mother working within the Maine court system. And the case was heard at the federal level by a transgender-friendly Democrat judge who predictably ruled against Libby's motion. So now we're going to jump from there to LifeSite News, and that was from the Fort Fairfield Journal. I didn't give the date, did I? That was April 30th, 2025. All right, April 30th. Well, now we jump to May 21st, and we have an article in LifeSite News that says, U.S. Supreme Court sides with Maine Republican, censured by Democrats, for calling out trans athlete. And so here we have the follow-up, where she gained the victory. This is by Calvin Freeberger, Wednesday, May 21st, LifeSite News. As previously covered by LifeSite News in February, Katie Spencer, that's in quotes, Katie Spencer, won first place in pole vault for Greenwood High School at the Class B State Championship meet. Spencer was actually a male student named John Rutzewski, who last year competed as a male and tied for ninth place in the boys' division. Pole vault coach Alan Cornwall said he attempted to warn officials about Spencer Rutzewski's participation, but, quote, no one dares to address it, unquote. State Representative Laurel Libby posted about the situation on Facebook, including photos of Rutzewski as both a boy and a girl at the different events. Despite the competition being a public event and mainstream media coverage, such as the Press Herald, that's the name of the newspaper, the Press Herald, containing numerous photos of the student competitors, Maine Democrats decided that Libby's use of event photos in a more critical manner was beyond the pale. The House voted in favor of a resolution censuring her for having, quote, identified the student athlete by name and shared pictures showing the minor in athletic uniform with a school name clearly legible, and blurred the faces of other student athletes to protect their privacy, while intentionally and deliberately leaving the named student's face exposed without that minor's consent in an effort to advance their political agenda, unquote. The resolution further faulted her for refusing to take down the post when asked, accused her of violating a, quote, basic tenet of politics and good moral character, that children should not be targeted by adult politicians, unquote, and claimed the school had to increase security as a result, amounting to an alleged violation of the legislative code of ethics. Libby refused to apologize on the House floor, instead having a contentious exchange on the floor with Democrat House Speaker Ryan Thecto and Maine House Minority Leader Billy Bob Falkenham said at the time, quote, this censure motion makes a mockery of the censure process. It sets a standard that says that the majority party, when they're displeased with a social media post that upsets them, can censure a member of the minority party and by a majority vote censure them, unquote. Libby appealed the matter, and on Tuesday, the nation's highest court ruled 7-2 in her favor, without elaboration. Far-left justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson were the two votes against her, with Jackson penning a dissent that argued Libby was not in danger of missing any critical votes before the date a lower court was slated to rule. Libby herself declared, this is a victory not just for my constituents, but for the Constitution itself. The Supreme Court has affirmed what should never have been in question, that no state legislature has the power to silence an elected official simply for speaking truthfully about issues that matter. Added U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, who filed an amicus brief on Libby's behalf, quote, the Department of Justice is proud to fight for girls in Maine and stand alongside Representative Libby, who is being attacked simply for defending girls in her home state. As our lawsuit against the state of Maine illustrates, we will always protect girls' sports and girls' spaces from radical gender ideology, unquote. Mandatory inclusion of gender-confused individuals in opposite-sex sports is promoted as a matter of, quote, inclusivity, unquote. But critics note that indulging transgender athletes undermines the original rationale basis for having sex-specific athletics in the first place, thereby depriving female athletes of recognition and professional or academic opportunities. There have been numerous high-profile examples in recent years of men winning women's competitions, and research affirms that physiology gives males distinct athletic advantages that cannot be fully negated by hormone suppression. In a 2019 paper published by the Journal of Medical Ethics, New Zealand researchers found that, quote, healthy young men do not lose significant muscle mass or power when their circulating testosterone levels were reduced to below International Olympic Committee guidelines for 20 weeks. And also, in quotes, indirect effects of testosterone on factors such as bone structure, lung volume, and heart size will not be altered by hormone therapy. Therefore, the advantage to trans women, that is, biological men, afforded by the International Olympic Committee guidelines is an intolerable unfairness. Well, I'll stop there for that article. There's a little bit more to it, but those who wish to can read it. This just affirms what common sense would tell us, that when a male takes a bunch of hormones to reduce the testosterone, it doesn't change their bone size. It doesn't change their muscular strength appreciably. It doesn't change their reach. For example, there was a boxing match not so many months ago where a man beat up on a woman, claiming he was a woman. Of course, that didn't change the fact that he could reach further than a woman could. An unfair advantage and common sense would just tell us this whole thing has gotten totally out of control. And that's Lou speaking now. All right, so again, that was from, let me see now. Well, now what did I do with that? That was from LifeSite News. And I'll have to get back to you later. I guess I somehow misplaced that. All right. Now, moving on, we have also from LifeSite News, U.S. Supreme Court sides with Maine Republican. Oh, no, no, no. I am so sorry. That is the one I just read. It was sitting right in front of me. Yeah, that was from LifeSite News, May 21st of this year. So now we move on to the People's Voice. MIT professor says there will be no climate catastrophe. This is by Neam Harris, May 30th, 2025. According to MIT professor Dr. Richard Lindzen, and that is spelled L-I-N-D-Z-E-N, he says there is no climate catastrophe. Dr. Lindzen, who is an atmospheric physicist and professor emeritus of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, said, quote, if you reach net zero by 2050, if you do it worldwide, you avoid about a third of a degree of warming. If it's just Europe and the Anglosphere, it's closer to a tenth of a degree, unquote. He added, so, you have avoided a tenth of a degree of warming at a cost of probably tens of trillions of dollars. Doesn't seem like a bargain to me, he adds. How far will the population go in saying, we will sacrifice ourselves for a symbolic gesture, unquote. In the video below, and again, you can see that video by going to the People's Voice on May 30th, in the video below, Lindzen talks about his work on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, and his concern for the mistaken narrative of climate alarmism and the way it will lead to the suffering of many. The Daily Skeptic reports, quote, I take that back, the quote doesn't come quite yet. The Daily Skeptic reports, and who cares about a tenth of a degree of warming, Lindzen asks, when somebody says the change of a tenth of a degree, or when UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says, if it changes a half degree, we're finished as a species. This is an existential threat. People have to ask, what the hell are they talking about? Unquote. According to Lindzen, all recent predictions of climate catastrophe have proven false, and future ones will be as well. 2030 will pass. These are his words. 2030 will pass. 2050 will pass. 50 years will pass. There will be no climate catastrophe, he says. In the interview, Lindzen thoroughly discusses what climate scientists know about climate change and its processes, as well as the half-truths and outright lies propagated by those proclaiming a climate crisis. He addresses topics such as the limited capacity of CO2 to warm the planet, its actual role on Earth, misleading claims about the increasing frequency of extreme weather events, the absurdity of climate policies, and the future of energy. Dr. Richard Lindzen is an internationally recognized American atmospheric scientist and MIT emeritus professor, whose contributions to climate science are significant. Over the course of his career, Lindzen has published almost 250 scientific papers exploring the greenhouse effect and other complex aspects of climate change, like dynamic meteorology, hydrodynamic instability, planetary waves, monsoon meteorology, planetary atmospheres, and hydrodynamic instability. And it goes on to describe some other research he's been engaged in. And I'll wrap it up with this statement. Lindzen has also contributed to the scientific reports of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So again, that's the IPCC. And at the end of the article, it says Lindzen is a member of both the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, elected in 1977, and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, elected in 1977. And we have a quote, a picture of Dr. Lindzen, and a quote. He says, when an issue becomes a vital part of a political agenda, as is the case with climate, then the politically desired position becomes a goal rather than a consequence of scientific research. Once again, that was from the People's Voice by Niamh, N-I-A-M-H, Harris, May 30th, 2025. And the title is, MIT Professor Says There Will Be No Climate Catastrophe. And now we have, also from the People's Voice, U.S. launches probe into free speech crackdown in Britain. The Trump administration remains committed. This is also by Niamh Harris, by the way, on May 28th of 2025 in the People's Voice. The Trump administration remains committed to standing up for freedom of speech in Europe and has just made an extraordinary move. The White House has become increasingly troubled by the arrests of pro-life activists, many of whom are Christians, for the, quote, crime, unquote, of silent prayer outside abortion clinics. As such, President Trump has sent a team of U.S. officials to meet the activists over concerns that freedom of speech has been threatened. LightSide News reports, Vice President J.D. Vance made international waves in February when he confronted European leaders at the Munich Security Conference on that free speech record, singling out the U.K.'s persecution of pro-life protesters. Vance noted that veteran Adam Smith Connor had been convicted and sentenced to pay thousands of pounds in legal costs simply for praying silently outside an abortion clinic. And Vance cited Scotland's draconian buffer zone that could apply to people praying inside their own homes. UK and Scottish politicians rushed to condemn Vance's accusations. In the course of one media interview, in which a Scottish MSP, which I assume is a member of Scottish Parliament, that member called Vance's speech absolute nonsense. Gillian Mackey, the parliamentarian who championed the buffer zone bill, was forced to admit that the law could apply in precisely the way that Vance had described. Prime Minister Keir Starmer attempted to defend the government's free speech record, but Trump has doubled down, most recently noting that the U.S. is, quote-unquote, monitoring the case of Lucy Connolly, a mother and wife of a conservative ex-counselor, jailed for 31 months for an angry and ill-advised ex-post after a terrorist butchered three little girls with a knife at a dance in Southport. Many have noted that the mother received more jail time for a swiftly deleted social media post than others have received for genuine crimes, said Suella Braverman, the former Tory Home Secretary. Quote, Lucy Connolly is effectively a political prisoner and should be freed immediately. She made an ill-judged tweet, soon deleted, that the U.S. is investigating this case as a sad indictment of the dire state of free speech under the Labour Party. Unquote. It appears that the Trump administration's commitment to free speech is more than just virtue signaling. The U.S. State Department sent a five-person team to the U.K. for several days to interview U.K. government targets and then report back to the White House on their findings. According to GB News, quote, the diplomats from the U.S. Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor traveled to London in March to, quote, affirm the importance of freedom of expression in the United Kingdom and across Europe. The delegation was led by Samuel Sampson, a senior advisor in the State Department. During the visit, the U.S. team met with five British activists who had been arrested for silently praying outside abortion clinics across the country, with the Telegraph reports. And it goes on to describe some other people who were involved, and it sums it up. Progressive politicians have long leveraged their power on behalf of the LGBT movement, abortion activists, and other ideological allies. J.D. Vance is illustrating what it looks like for a conservative politician to do the same thing. All right, now another matter in the news that has been a cause of controversy for quite some time and may finally get a fair hearing. This is from Slate News. The other one, by the way, was from The People's Voice on May 28th, the one I just read. From Slate News, May 30th, by Frank Bergman, major study concludes childhood vaccines are causing autism epidemic. And this is Luke speaking now. We've heard this for a long time. We have felt that there was strong evidence that this could very well be true. So here's some more evidence. A major new study from a leading expert in Australia has concluded that vaccine schedules, and this is in quotes, vaccine schedules are causing the autism epidemic, unquote. During the study, Dr. Toby Rogers, a political economist with a PhD from the University of Sydney, analyzed hundreds of research papers related to autism cases in the United States. Rogers has now published a sweeping overview of more than 850 U.S.-based studies on the causes of autism. The results of the study, published on Dr. Rogers' Substack page, U-tobian, that's a little U, capital T, O-B-I-A-N, build on his earlier academic work and present what he's called, or what he calls, a meta level, M-E-T-A level, analysis of the scientific literature on autism causation. Rogers has identified what he believes is a clear pattern and a roadmap to ending the autism epidemic. He argues that the mainstream scientific establishment has failed to uncover the true drivers of autism, not because of a lack of research, but due to what he describes as widespread bias and flawed assumptions in how studies are conducted. He points specifically to more than 20 studies published since 2000. Those studies conclude there is no association between vaccines and autism. And this is Lou speaking. We've all heard this repeatedly propagandized, if that's the correct word, over the major media. But back to the article. However, these studies are misleading. According to Rogers, they contradict the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's own internal research. The CDC data shows that both MMR and thimerosal-containing vaccines do, in fact, contribute to autism risk. The article also critiques the decades-long attempt to prove that autism is genetically determined. Rogers notes that despite the U.S. government investing $2 billion into genetic research and further efforts by private foundations, no genetic variant has been found to account for more than 1% of autism cases. Rogers wrote, quote, "They failed categorically," unquote. And he asserts that these studies often rely on circular logic and ignore environmental and vaccine-related factors entirely. Rogers is especially critical of four large-scale epigenetic studies, which he claims all share a common flaw. They assume from the outset that vaccines are safe, and therefore they fail to include unvaccinated control groups or examine vaccination as a potential variable. He describes this as standard practice, arguing that these studies ignore toxicants and vaccines while simultaneously investigating the same toxicants and environmental exposure A contradiction, he says, undermines their conclusions. Rogers then shifts to what he sees as the more credible body of research. He cites a 2018 study that found that up to 88% of autism cases are characterized by autistic regression. This autistic regression is a sudden and dramatic loss of previously acquired skills, such as speech, eye contact, and social interaction, he explains. According to Rogers, this points to an acute toxic exposure event, which, in countless parent reports, follows routine well baby, that's the name of that kind of vaccination, well baby vaccination appointments. Rogers highlights six studies comparing vaccinated and unvaccinated children, which he argues are the holy grail of autism research. He claims these studies show that vaccination increases the risk of autism by a factor of four, with certain risk combinations, such as vaccination plus premature birth, C-section delivery, or absence of breastfeeding, leading to dramatic higher odds ratios of 12 to 18 times the baseline risk. Rogers concludes, quote, "We know what's causing the autism epidemic," unquote. The bloated, unscientific, profit-driven CDC vaccine schedules are causing the autism epidemic, unquote. And he calls for a reassessment of current public health policies and a deeper, more transparent evaluation of the risks he believes are being overlooked. The vaccines are causing autism risk to skyrocket, he warns. That's what's causing the autism epidemic, according to the best available scientific evidence, unquote. Again, that article from Dr. Toby Rogers was in the May 30th online edition of Slay News. Major study concludes childhood vaccines are causing autism epidemic. And in a related article talking about what's happening in Canada, this one was from LifeSite News, Wednesday, May 28th, 2025. Health Canada fails to rule out MAID, or MAID, for autistic children, documents show. This is by Anthony Murdoch, again, Wednesday, May 28th. Documents show that Health Canada has been funding a university research project concerning, quote, youth views, unquote, on euthanasia, that included a brief discussion as to whether children with severe autism would ever be allowed to qualify for death under the nation's Medical Assistance in Dying, or MAID, program. The documents, which were made public by Rebel News, show that Health Canada has given some $549,068 towards a four-year research project with Canada's Dalhousie University to study, quote, youth views on end-of-life care, palliative care, and MAID, unquote. The internal documents come from 2024 and concern email chains, which can be viewed here. And again, you can click on that link if you go to their website, regarding talk of allowing MAID for minors. One email exchange shows a Health Canada official in Heather Davids, who was with the Indigenous end-of-life care team, asking two top-level bureaucrats in Canada's MAID unit named Ian Gillies and Richard Martin, quote, "How should the department respond to public correspondence about whether severe autism meets the eligibility criteria for MAID? And again, just to refresh our memory, MAID is Medical Assistance in Dying. A draft reply included the response, quote, "Your position will be carefully considered as the government advances with MAID legislation," unquote. It's worth noting that this draft reply was eventually taken out of a later version of the internal notes. While the draft reply does not endorse the practice of MAID for autistic children, activists have long been pushing for expansions in the nation's euthanasia program, specifically advocating for the practice to allow the killing of so-called mature minors and those suffering solely from mental illness. In fact, the expansion of euthanasia for the mentally ill is slated to become law in 2027 as a consequence of the 2021 passage of Bill C-7. Well, that gives you the general idea about that. It concludes that it's worth noting that the Conservative Party has attempted to oppose the expansion of MAID for some time, but recent legislative attempts to stop the expansion outright instead of just delaying it, such as through Bill C-314, have failed. So we see this, is Linda speaking now, we see this agenda, especially in Canada, but I think it's growing in the USA too, of getting rid of those that are not wanted, just like in Nazi Germany, just like the programs initiated by Adolf Hitler to get rid of those that are not worthy of life. And it's a shocking and disturbing thing. Again, that article is from LifeSite News, May 28th. Now, I have a lengthy article here, and time doesn't even begin to read the whole thing, so I'll just give you a little summary of it. This is from LifeSite News. Tim Hinchcliffe was the author, May 30th, 2025. Globalist Club of Rome pushes plan to control food, travel, and property for, you guessed it, climate change. And the summary says a new task force backed by the UN, European Environment Agency, Hot or Cool Institute, and the Club of Rome seeks radical limits on meat consumption, cars, and ownership. And this was from a publication called The Sociable, reprinted with their permission in LifeSite News. I'll just read a paragraph or two. You can look at it. It runs to, I think, even without the, even if you delete the photographs, which I usually do to save the toner, runs to at least 6 pages, so it's a lengthy article. Here's a quick summary. The Club of Rome and the Hot or Cool Institute launched the Materials and Consumption Task Force that will give policy recommendations that, if implemented, would restrict your ability to decide how you travel, what you eat, and how you live your life, all in the name of sustainability and the global economic system. Launched on May 23rd, the task force will begin producing, quote, guidelines that will serve as a critical resource for policymakers, businesses, and civil society, providing an in-depth analysis of materials and consumption and offering practical solutions for a more resource-secure future, unquote, according to the Club of Rome press release. The task force recognizes that materials and consumption lie at the heart of many interconnected crises, from the escalating demand for critical minerals to the impact of supply chains on climate change and social inequalities. Addressing these issues is essential to building a sustainable and resilient future. And this is Lou speaking now. There's that word sustainable. Always get your antenna up when you hear that word, sustainable. And it goes on, as I say, for at least 6 pages to describe many of the things in this report from the Club of Rome. And some of the subheadings include restricting ownership within the circular economy. And let's see what else we have here. Restricting the food you eat for your safety and the planet's. So Big Daddy government wants to keep you safe. Except this is going to be like a world government. Another one, restricting travel and mobility to keep you in 15-minute cities. So you can get everything you need, supposedly, within 15 minutes of your home. Do you believe that? You believe that within 15 minutes of your home, there's going to be a college and a hospital and grocery stores and entertainment and everything else you could possibly want. I think that seems possible. Well, that's a very good article, and time doesn't permit us to go into the details. But if you would like to, one other thing before I say that, another little subheading of this article, the Materials and Consumption Task Force is an attempt to micromanage your life. I would certainly agree with that statement. And if you'd like to see the details, you can go to LifeSiteNews.com. Look for the article entitled Globalist Club of Rome Pushes Plan to Control Food, Travel, and Property for, quote, climate change, unquote. And this appeared May 30th, 2025, LifeSiteNews.com. Here's a little more lighthearted thing. Might not have been lighthearted for the people involved than the People's Voice. Drunk Brigitte, that's in quotes, Drunk Brigitte assaults Emmanuel Macron amid a looming pedophilia scandal. This was May 26, 2025, by Sean Eddie Tabatabai. In a shocking incident captured on camera, France's President Emmanuel Macron was slapped by his visibly drunk wife, Brigitte, amid swirling rumors of a pedophilia scandal that is set to send shockwaves through France. The assault occurred as the couple disembarked from a plane in Vietnam during a Southeast Asia tour. Excuse me. And that intensified scrutiny over Brigitte's transgender identity and their relationship, which began when Macron was 15 and she was 39. The public altercation has sparked widespread speculation, with critics pointing to Brigitte's demeanor and the timing of the incident as evidence of deeper tensions within the Macron household. As the pedophilia allegations gain traction, the Vietnamese stopover has become a flashpoint, overshadowing the diplomatic objectives of the tour and raising questions about the stability of Macron's presidency. Infowars.com reports, quote, the puppet president of France, Emmanuel Macron, has been slapped in the face publicly by the creature masquerading as his wife, Alex Jones wrote on X. Well, you can read up on that. I think that's been in several other venues as well as the People's Voice. Now, the President Macron told reporters in Hanoi, Vietnam, that he and his wife were joking around, as we quite often do, despite the footage showing his clearly shocked face as he was surprised by the attack. And the president said, quote, there's a video showing me joking and teasing my wife, and somehow that becomes a sort of geoplanetary catastrophe, with people even coming up with theories to explain it, unquote. And the French leader also pointed out that people have, quote, thought I shared a bag of cocaine, tussled with the Turkish president, now that I'm having a domestic dispute with my wife. And he added, none of this is true. Everyone needs to calm down, unquote. Well, you can take what you will from that little report. That was from the People's Voice on May 26th. And we've got just enough time for one thing, and a much more serious note. Ancient Garden found a Jesus Christ burial site verifying biblical account. This was from archaeologymagazine.com. The exact website is archaeologymag.com. On April 6, 2025, archaeologists digging beneath the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem have unearthed a finding that provides strong evidence for a significant detail of the New Testament, the presence of a garden near the site of the crucifixion and burial of Jesus Christ. The discovery gives strong verification of John 19:41 from the Bible, which states, now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. Headed by the Sapienza University of Rome, Professor Francesca Romana Stessola, The excavation team found remains of olive trees and grapevines that are approximately 2,000 years old. These plant remnants, seeds, and pollen were discovered via archaeobotanical analysis performed on soil samples that had been extracted from beneath the stone floor of the church. And Professor Stasola told the Times of Israel, quote, "The archaeobiological findings have been especially interesting for us in light of what is mentioned in the Gospel of John. The Gospel mentions a green area between Calvary and the tomb, and we identified these cultivated fields," unquote. The excavation, which began in 2022, is the most extensive archaeological excavation at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in nearly 200 years. The excavation is within the framework of a broader restoration project approved by the three religious communities that manage the church, the Orthodox Patriarchate, the Custody of the Holy Land, and the Armenian Patriarchate, and licensed by the Israeli Antiquities Authority. And it has some excellent pictures if you go to their website. The site where the church stands today was once a quarry, which was later a cultivated field and eventually a burial site by the first century CE. Just all it said. CE, of course, is another name for AD. Archaeologists also uncovered finds like pottery, oil lamps, glass, and low stone walls separating garden plots, some of which date back as far as the Iron Age. All this attests to widespread human presence and pilgrimage at the site spanning a long history. And there's more to that if you want to go through it. Again, this is a case where there's a long website name. I think if you just go to the title, research the title, Ancient Garden Found at Jesus Christ Burial Site, that's the easiest way to get to it. And the date was April 6, 2025. Thank you so much for listening. I see our time is running out. You can write to us. Write to me, Luke Haverly, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And you can request a free book, COVID and Coming Chaos. We'll have a few copies left, and I'll be happy to send you one. And if you can make any contributions to help us stay on the air, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much, and tune in again next week.